Hello and welcome everybody to episode 2 of Post Game Panic. It is Wednesday, October the 16th, I believe. Yes, it is October the 16th. And a lot went down yesterday after I recorded my podcast, after our show was done. So let's get straight to it. We'll start the NFL. Marcus Peters of the, was of the Los Angeles Rams at the time, was dealt to the Baltimore Ravens. And that was kind of a shock because it comes right after the Rams put Aqib Talib on injured reserve. Marcus Peters has now been dealt twice in his career, and that's before he even got to his second contract. And it's kind of surprising because he's a pretty productive guy. You know, he gets a lot of interceptions. The problem with him that a lot of people come up with is that he gets burnt a lot and he's a bad locker room guy. But he's 26, so a lot of people were kind of surprised, like, whoa, like, dang, okay, that for a team that needs help in the secondary, what are you doing trading Marcus Peters? That's kind of a iffy situation. The Rams got back linebacker Kenny Young from Baltimore. I believe Kenny Young's a rookie. Baltimore didn't even need a secondary, to be honest. They have Marlon Humphrey, Earl Thomas, guys I'm not even thinking of right now, but those two alone, I mean, are great in the secondary, and now they have Marcus Peters, so they're going to definitely upgrade that secondary. But this was just the start of a ripple effect yesterday, because like an hour or 2 hours after that occurred, the Rams said, you know what, we just got rid of a part of our secondary, it's time to add a part of our secondary, and they traded for Jalen Ramsey, a man that has been wanting out of Jacksonville for weeks now, basically a month now. After their week 2 loss at Houston, he said, all right, I need out of here. Don't want to be here. He had a conflict with the head coach, Doug Marrone. And so he finally got out. And Jalen said, all right, you know what? I'm not playing. You're just going to have to trade me because I'm not playing anymore. And so they did. They traded him to the Rams for 2 future first-round picks, the 2020 first and the 2021 first, and a fourth. So the Rams now do not have a first-round pick in the next 2 years, and they don't have a fourth, I believe it's next year. I think they have the fourth this year. Huge deal. And I'd say this. I don't think that was the biggest problem with the Los Angeles Rams. And I know a lot of people are going to say, well, what do you mean? Like, even if it isn't the biggest problem, you're putting in a solution. But I think their biggest problem is still Todd Gurley's health. That offense is horrid without Todd Gurley. It is just bad. And even with Todd Gurley, it's not the same Todd Gurley that we have, you know, become accustomed to. The same Todd Gurley that we knew before the injury last year. Whatever happened, and it wasn't even like it happened on one play. It kind of happened, and it was like, what just happened? Like, he went from all pro to we're not even giving him the ball. So obviously, that's the concern. Jared Goff this season has 7 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. I mean, that's not good football, right? I mean, that's just, you don't like to see that if you're the Los Angeles Rams. And I think a lot of that is because there's no running game being established. Part of that is on the Rams not giving him a running game. Part of that's on Jared Goff not being able to thrive without a running game. We've seen quarterbacks do it all the time. Drew Brees, you know, at times didn't have a great running game. Aaron Rodgers has, for the most part of his career, not had a good running game. Patrick Mahomes right now doesn't have a good running game. Tom Brady, for parts of his career, didn't have a great running game. And they were still able to overcome things. And I'm not trying to say Jared Goff deserves to be on those a tier with those guys, but when you're getting paid $110 million guaranteed, people need to see more. Sean McVay said, we like to think an offensive guru. This year they've run into some trouble. They're 3-3. The front office had enough of what the hell was happening, and they made a move. They went and got one of the top corners in the game. I don't blame them, honestly. They're trying to win right now, but it is a crowded NFC. And that, it's going to be tough. You know, they won it last year by just barely, but they did. You know, you got to give them credit. Even if there was a bad call, they were able to come out on top and win that. And so now, you know, there's a lot of questions in LA. Are the Rams going to be able to make it this year with the 49ers emerging and the Seahawks being good again? It's a lot of questions. Right now, it looks like the Rams are closer to the Cardinals than they are the 49ers after Goff threw for an abysmal 78 passing yards on Sunday versus the 49ers. I switching gears into more NFL news. The Tennessee Titans, a team that probably nobody cares about, probably the most boring franchise in professional sports. but regardless, they made a move, and they benched former first-round pick Marcus Mariota in favor of Tannehill on Sunday, and then Mike Vrabel, the head coach, came out on Tuesday and announced that that change would continue into this next week. Upcoming, Tannehill would get the start. Tannehill, a seasoned veteran, 31 years old. He didn't really have much of an answer versus Denver's defense once he got in. It wasn't as bad as Mariota, but that's really besides the point. You know, the point isn't, we're not going to discuss Ryan Tannehill, because we know Ryan Tannehill's career is over, basically. He's 31. He had promise at one point, but now he just looks like a career backup, a good backup at that, but a career backup. But the point that we go back to is Marcus Mariota, and yesterday we discussed, you know, how the first two picks of the draft appear to be a bust. They're not good, but this is bad. I mean, Marcus Mariota this season is 2-4 as a starter, but you can't pin a record on one guy specifically, right? That's probably the least telling thing for me, although when you're losing, changes are made. He has completed 59.1% of his passes. In today's NFL, that doesn't work. You can't do that. That's not going to cut it. Not at all. 59% of your passes can be incompleted or not going to work. He does have 7 touchdown passes, but 2 interceptions, which isn't that bad statistically when you see that. But he's not really making splash plays. We're going to go specifically into games. Week 1, they went into Cleveland and shocked a lot of people. He threw 3 touchdowns, no picks, played a great game. Only completed 58% of his passes, but still, played a great game. Nobody expected the Titans to go in there and wax the Cleveland Browns like they did. But this is kind of where the inconsistencies of Marcus Mariota come out. Next week, he throws 1 touchdown, no picks, but only 154 yards. He does complete 68% of his passes, so that's pretty good. The next week, Thursday Night Football, short week, no touchdowns, no picks, 304 yards, only 57% completion. And that's just not going to win you many football games. The next week, they win in Atlanta, but keep in mind, this has been the worst defense of football, but it was a good week for Mariota. 18-27, 66% completion, 3 touchdowns, no picks. It's the last 2 weeks that have really, really haunted Marcus Mariota. Versus Buffalo, who is a great defense. Buffalo has an outstanding defense. But he only completed 59% of his balls, no touchdowns, no picks. Lost the game 14-7 at home. Yikes. And then this past week at Denver, he completed 38% of his passes, no touchdowns, 2 picks. 63 yards. And of course they benched him. I've got to keep it real with you. That might be the last Marcus Mariota gets to be a starter in this league. I'm not saying he won't be in the league anymore, but that may have been the last opportunity. This year might have been it. They might have said, all right, Marcus, that's enough. You know, because they bring him, let's go back when they bring in Matt LaFleur as offensive coordinator, and that was last year. And they weren't very good offensively. They were 27th. Mariota did have a couple injuries, but they weren't that good offensively last year. 27th in the NFL on total offense. Matt LaFleur surprisingly gets the Green Bay head coaching job, and so there's change in Tennessee. And they're thinking, all right, maybe another face will help Mariota. This will be his third offensive coordinator at this point. And Mariota still sucks. Mariota's still not good. He's still just not a starting quarterback. And the Titans have a solid defense. At this point, they believe that they have a solid core offensively. You'd like to think they have a good offensive line. It's underperformed at this point, but you'd like to think they have a good offensive line. You have Delanie Walker, Corey Davis. You drafted A.J. Brown. You feel like at this point, you have put pieces into place for Marcus Mariota to be successful, and he's not really being successful. It's not working out yet. And I think at this point, if you're willing to bench a guy who's making $20.8 million on his fifth-year option, I think you're willing to move off of him in the offseason. So I think the Titans are in the running for a quarterback this offseason. The biggest problem, though, is that they probably already surpassed the win total that the Miami Dolphins will. So they will not be getting the top guy in this draft, rather that be Tua Tagovailoa or Justin Herbert or whoever it may be. They are not going to get the top guy in this draft because it's really going to be a difficult thing to see. The Miami Dolphins picking up 2 wins this year or the honestly the Washington Redskins for that matter. They might not even get there, but they'll probably keep Dwayne Haskins. Maybe the Bengals even move off of Andy Dalton. So yeah, a busy day yesterday in the National Football League on an off day, you know. Also, the officials came out and admitted that they got the two calls wrong on Trey Flowers. They apologized for it, but apologies don't do anything. They don't, because you can apologize for something, but then they keep making the same mistakes. So, again, going back to the referees, you've got to be better. You've got to be better. You have to be better. It's a joke. You cannot just come out after blowing a game and say, "We apologize. We missed some calls." What does that do for the fans? Your apology doesn't put a win in the column. Your apology doesn't, you know, turn back a night that they were so frustrated that, you know, they just couldn't even stand it. You know, what does your apology do? Your apology's worthless. You might as well keep it. Might as well keep it. Moving on to the Major League Baseball. Last night was Game 4 of the NLCS, and the Nationals get out to a quick 7-0 lead early. A lot of bad defense, some good hitting, and the Cardinals, of course, were down to their last life. And then, you know, the Nationals go out, and they find a way to keep it going. Patrick Corbin does a good job, 5 innings pitched. They end up holding them off the Cardinals 7-4, and they're National League champions, and they will play in the World Series for the first time as the Washington Nationals. Last time they were in the World Series was the Expos, I believe. I don't even know if they were in the World Series as the Expos. Whatever. The point is, it's been a long time, and they're finally back. And I think this goes to a point, and I'd like to point this out. And I think this can go for all sports, and this is kind of one of my main segments today. Stop overpaying for overrated players. The Washington Nationals were in a tough spot. Their superstar, their franchise, the player that started with them, the player that was one of the faces of Major League Baseball, the player that the city had fallen in love with, was a free agent. And that's Bryce Harper. And he wanted top dollar, and the city wanted to pay him top dollar. He was their franchise. Many thought if he left, it was over. They weren't going to be able to compete. They were coming off of a disappointing year that they did have a winning record but missed the postseason in 2018. The Washington Nationals made the choice that these other organizations won't, that these other sports teams, these other front offices just won't do. And you see it all the time. You see it all the time. They let him go. They said, "Bryce, we love you. We love what you've done for the city. We know you're a great talent. We know you're a great player. We simply cannot give you that type of contract. It's not in the team's best interest. So good luck to wherever you go." And that's that. So many teams have trouble doing this. But it also gets so many teams in cap hell. It gets them in a bad spot as a team, because then they can't afford other players, and it's just becoming a huge issue. There's a lot of franchises, lots of them, that if they had a guy start with them, they drafted, that was one of the faces of the league, and was a great talent, and was young, would have just, even though they didn't feel like it, would have just paid them, would have just said, "All right, here's the checkbook. Write in what you want. Write in what you want. We can't let you leave the city. We just can't." Well, those are the teams that are unsuccessful. Most of the time. You take a look at it throughout the league. And you just look at it. It happens in the NFL all the time. Are we sure that Matthew Stafford was worth the money? I mean, are we sure that paying him top dollar was worth it? Are we sure paying Kirk Cousins, even though that's not the same situation, was a good idea? What about paying Andy Dalton? Was that a great decision? But you don't want to let him go because they started with you. You don't want to let them go because they've been there. You don't want to let them go because, you know, you've fallen in love with them, the city's fallen in love with them. I'm not sure the city fell in love with Andy Dalton or Kirk Cousins, but you understand the point. And that's what the Cowboys are going to do with Dak Prescott. And that's the mistake that they're going to end up eventually making with Dak Prescott, of course, and they're going to pay him. But the Washington Nationals are sitting in the World Series today, and Bryce Harper's sitting on the couch. And you want to know why? They wouldn't cave, and they weren't going to be emotionally making this decision. They were going to be financially making this decision. They were going to be logically making this decision. And even though they had to watch a player that they loved go to a division opponent, they ended up using the money that they didn't spend on him on left-handed pitcher Patrick Corbin, who started game four of the NLCS and struck out 12 batters, ultimately leading them to the World Series. It's a lesson. You might love a player, but don't let your heart make the contract. Don't let that happen. Make sure you're using your brains. Make sure you're using your head. If a guy wants 13 years, $300 million plus, see ya. No. Most of the time, 99.9% of the time, no. That cannot happen. And there's a reason. Was Bryce Harper going to help that team get over the hump? He could have, maybe. But if they spend all that money on him, they've got players like Anthony Rendon, Juan Soto, Robles, there's probably more I'm not even thinking of, Trey Turner, that they've got to pay that they wouldn't be able to if they spent that money on Harper. But since they didn't, and they only used a portion of it on Patrick Corbin, they're set for the future, and they're set for right now, because they got a pretty good ball club. They did something that a lot of organizations wouldn't have, and it paid off. They're in the World Series. Congratulations to the Nationals. Tip my hat to you for letting Harper go. And to the Phillies, you guys are a bunch of idiots for giving him that contract, because there's no player in the history of the league that could ever live up to that contract. In the ALCS side of things, switching over, the Houston Astros are up 2-1 on the New York Yankees. They won Game 3, 4-1. Gerrit Cole, 7 innings, dominant. No earned runs again. He hasn't allowed a run in the 3 starts he's had in the postseason. The Yankees, they got Game 1, but the bats have been kind of quiet since. Two runs in game 2 of the series, and then 1 run off the bullpen in game 3 of the series, and that's at home. Gerrit Cole wasn't even his best, and he did that. But the point that I want to make here is how brilliant the Houston Astros have built this team, and how brilliant that front office is. Go back to their World Series in 2017 and think of the players they didn't have that are on this roster that are great players. Obviously, there's one, Gerrit Cole. No doubt. 100% Gerrit Cole. He's an insane talent, and they didn't even have him. Zach Greinke, he hasn't been great in Houston. He hasn't been just utterly dominant, but he's Zach Greinke. I mean, you take Zach Greinke if you can get him. Alvarez, the prospect. Just a young kid coming up, smashing homers. Just doing it like it's nothing. Roberto Osuna. I mean, an all-star closer. The point I'm trying to make here is that most teams, after they win a World Series, are like, all right, we've got a squad. We don't need to get more. Let's just keep the guys we've got. Let's just try and keep the guys intact and go for another run. Houston Astros understand that's not the way baseball's going to work. Think about the past World Series champions. The Boston Red Sox. They tried to keep things intact. The only guys they lost were Joe Kelly and Craig Kimbrell. What an utterly disappointing season they had. What an utterly disappointing season they had. They brought back Steve Pierce. Even though when they traded for him, realistically, they only thought they were going to get a half a season out of him, but he had such a good postseason that they had to keep him, and it really didn't do anything in the 2019 season. The 2017 Astros got better. Credit to them. The 2016 Cubs, they tried to keep some things in place. They did, unfortunately for them, lose Aroldis Chapman, but they did get to keep some things in place, and they've never gotten even really close to back. They've never gotten within the game of getting back. The 2015 Royals, they tried to keep the core intact. They overpaid for Alex Gordon. They brought back Chris Young. They brought back, you know, these guys, and they didn't have it the next year. And they ended up going 500. 2014 Giants. They tried to keep the roster intact, and nothing to see of it. The point is, you can't keep the same roster together in baseball and expect the same thing to happen from year to year. And the Houston Astros understand this to an extent that other teams don't. How many teams would be comfortable just letting Dallas Keuchel leave? I mean, they just feel like, all right, you know, you had like a 3.5 ERA, you won like 15 games, sorry, see you. I mean, that's insane. That's insane. And have they kept a lot of that core together? I know the argument will be, well, they still have Altuve, they still have Gurriel, they still have Bregman, they still have Springer, they still have Correa. Yes, they're young hitters, they're young players. Like, obviously, you're going to keep young all-stars. That's going to happen. But the point I'm trying to make is, how many teams that win a World Series go out there the next offseason and are like, yeah, let's go get Garrett Cole. You know, like, let's give up any prospect we have. Let's go get Garrett Cole. You know, most front offices would be like, oh, we just won a World Series. Let's just go get some, you know, like some smaller pieces to chip in next year and let's see what we can do. No, they're like, oh, you know what? Let's just go get one of the most dominant starting pitchers in baseball. And since he's been in Houston, he's been the best pitcher in baseball. It's definitely something to note. You know, when you have a great team, it's not, in baseball at least, going to last year to year. And the Houston Astros have done a fantastic job at that. They have made differences. They have made changes. I mean, Ken Giles was pretty good there. He had some meltdowns, but he was pretty good there. They traded him. I mean, that's just the way that they work. And I, you know, tip the cap to them. They're going to be, you know, they should be successful in the MLB for a long time coming. Even though they're pitching, Verlander's getting a little older, but they should be successful for the next at least 5 seasons coming up. I mean, they went through hell, and that organization, just great rebuild. But for the series itself, I still think the Yankees have a good shot to win it. Game 4 is rained out for tonight. So it's kind of a big deal because it was going to be a bullpen game for both teams. Now, things have changed up a little bit and both teams get to, get a starter in there tomorrow. I'm assuming Severino's going to start tomorrow for the, Yanks. So that'll be interesting. Or maybe Tanaka gets the start tomorrow. We'll have to see. And I don't think they've announced yet, but that's just an overall, a huge deal for both of them. On to the NBA. Spent a lot of time on baseball today, even though there wasn't a game. Wow. But on to the NBA. Preseason's still going on, but the big headline has been the Chinese government, the Chinese Hong Kong protesters, and LeBron James' comments on the deal. And I'm not going to get political on here. I'm not trying to, you know, side with one thing or another. But it is important to point out, as a LeBron James fan myself, I still have to point out, LeBron James made some bad comments. He said that Daryl Morey, I don't know how to say his name. God, can't even pronounce the dude's name. But the owner, or I think he's the owner, maybe the GM of the Houston Rockets, came out and said some controversial stuff about Hong Kong and the protesters. You know, they're fighting to be a democracy instead of a dictatorship, all that nice stuff. You know, they're just trying to get freedom. They're protesting in the streets and stuff. Daryl Morey had some comments on that. And then the Lakers go over there in China to play in the preseason because that's what, you know, the NBA has been doing. The, you know, people in China were ripping down posters of the NBA, the, you know, the landmarks of them, the logos of them, the Rockets were getting painted over. But they went and played. Adam Silver had it done. And then LeBron James was first asked about it. Rachel Nichols tweeted it out about his stance on it. And he said that he thought that Daryl Morey was uneducated and he didn't really understand the situation. Which is kind of, you know, it's not true. LeBron James just said that. And it's kind of sad to see what the NBA has become. Because what's happening over there is not right. Those people are protesting for equal right, liberty. They want freedom. They want a democracy. And they're not getting it. And Daryl Morey came out and said something about it. And he was educated about it. And LeBron James comes out and claims that he's not educated, that he shouldn't talk about it. The same guy who was told to shut up and dribble, which is obviously stupid, but when he was told to shut up and dribble, said no. But he's kind of telling Daryl Morey to, you know, shut up and get educated and stuff like that. And it's a pretty hypocritical statement. LeBron shouldn't have said anything, but it wouldn't shock me if Adam Silver was the man that was behind all this and he said, God, we're going to lose a lot of money. LeBron, can you speak up about this? LeBron apologized in a tweet, but, you know, the damage is kind of done. People are burning his jersey in Hong Kong. in the streets. LeBron, I think, you know, as a big fan of LeBron James, a pretty big mistake for LeBron on this one. Can't really back you up on this one, LeBron. And honestly, I'm kind of disappointed in the NBA for still playing over there and worrying about the, you know, the sponsorships and the money more than the people's lives over there that are fighting for a democracy. But again, I don't want to get too political on that. I just want to point out LeBron's comments. It's kind of newsworthy sports-wise. But for the NBA itself, on Tuesday, so 6 days from now, we're getting the regular season kicked off. Cannot wait for that. Probably Monday I'll do my NBA predictions right before the season. Want to make sure everything's all right. Make sure no last-second trades or injuries go down, and then we'll be able to make those. Tomorrow night, Thursday Night Football, Chiefs, Broncos, we'll get into it a little more. That podcast should be up before the game. So not much really to talk about in the NFL quite yet. We'll make our picks on Saturday. College football, we'll get into a little bit on Friday. So I think we're going to wrap it up here today. This is episode 2 of Post Game Panic. Good episode today. Some interesting topics. Please, if you're listening on YouTube, subscribe, like, do all that following, turn on post notifications so you never miss it. I'm going to post a podcast every day, Monday through Friday. I guess we'll talk about the NFL on Friday because I'm not going to do one on Saturday. And then if you're listening on CastBox, subscribe, listen, and we're going to try and get on other platforms. But for now, this has been episode 2 on Wednesday, October 16th. Hope everyone has a great day. No sports today. No baseball got rained out. No football. Preseason basketball. But yeah, take it easy. It's one of the few days you're not going to have sports, football, basketball, or baseball that is regular season. So enjoy it, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.